Eye on Careers.
In association with Laymoon.com. Jobs, courses, and all things career.
All right, welcome back to Eye on Careers. We just had a man who was broke, and now he's worth $400 million. Excuse me? My God. I know people who are like, if I get a 20% pay raise next year, I'll be pretty good. This guy had like a 1,000,000% pay raise. My goodness. I hope I'm worth $400 million in a few years. That would be awesome. And I'd still be here doing Eye on Careers because I, you know, just love these stories. It's amazing when you sit back and you meet entrepreneurs and people who are chasing their dreams, you realize, why not you? Why not you? But before that, if you're not ready to do it, you may want to, you know, go study and maybe get a business degree or something like that, because not all of us are like Mr. 400 million, just run out there and get it done. Some of us need to learn, you know, how to calculate EBITDA. So you can do that at the S.P. Jane School of Global Management. And here to tell us about it is Dr. Brinda. Doctor, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here.
I know, it's great to be here.
And you're in a global management. I was thinking I can barely manage myself, let alone the whole globe.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to having you at our program.
Will I be able to manage the globe? No. So what? Tell us a little bit about your program. Why is it different? I think you have a bit of a different flavor on things.
Well, we're the first Tri-City model, so the world's first Tri-City Bachelor of Business Administration program. And it's very exciting because basically we move our students across the globe, hence we're global. We move them from Singapore to Dubai and then on to Sydney. So I think you can hear a bit of a twang in my accent because I've just come from Sydney.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to
stay. You didn't talk like that before you went there?
Not with a twang.
Really?
I came from the UK, so I spoke the Queen's English.
So, wow.
Yes.
How long did it take to get the twang?
Is it really obvious?
I didn't know, but I thought you were always speaking like that.
With the twang?
Know. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
How twangy is it? I don't know. So this new Tri-City, it sounds really exciting, you know, the Tri-City. But is it now attracting more attention because people feel that having exposure in one city is not enough in the global 21st century, that we need to have this exposure? And are employers actually looking for it? Do they really care?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, if you think about business today, it's very fluid. In essence, I mean, I'm from a finance background, and anything just moves across the world with the touch of a button. So you have to actually be able to understand all the different environments and understand the cultural nuances that you get from different countries. I think if you can understand that, it makes you much more successful in business. So we're finding that with our business program. We've had very successful internships. I think we're talking about the potential for placements. Our particular program is very young. We've got our first batch graduating on the 29th of April, so we're pretty excited. And they're already being interviewed by lots of multinational companies, large companies, small companies, top-tier consulting firms, top-tier banks, etc. So, and they're looking for these types of graduates because they're agile. They've moved from one country to another. They should be able to ratchet themselves up the career ladder very quickly because they've been able to move from all these different environments at such a rapid pace.
So I always think that's interesting, though, that it basically margins itself out, in my opinion, because people go and get like the top business degree and then they go join a private equity firm or a strategy consultancy where everybody else in the firm has, you know, this big business degree. And so your intellectual arbitrage edge is like lost. Like, you know, I think you should tell your students that once you get your big degree, you should go into like selling nails or something, you know, like where like everybody doesn't have an Ivy League business degree. And then you get your edge. Like,
we have a mixture. So I'd agree with that. You have a mixture. And we have a great bunch of students. So some of them are going to be entrepreneurs. I've already seen that. We're getting all their entrepreneurial ideas coming through. And we've got some that are going to go through and become big marketing salespeople, and then we've got a whole load that are going to go to the investment industry. And we've had some exciting news last night, if I can share that with you. For those going into the finance industry, we've actually, You're making funny gestures at me, and I'm supposed to be doing something.
I just tell you to stalk into the microphone.
Oh, okay. Is that any better?
There we go.
Okay.
Yeah, it's much better. It's louder. You can hear her better, SMS. It's at 4001.
Okay, excellent. I'll try not to shout. I was just going to say we had some exciting news last night. Our BBA program got endorsed by the CFA Institute, which shows that it is actually a global globally validated finance degree. It's a high quality degree. If you know about the CFA program, it's the gold standard in the investment industry. So being endorsed by that is very exciting for us. And I'm sure we're going to see some rapid response from a lot of investment companies wanting to actually recruit our graduates as well. And so that's pretty exciting too.
And the investment market is definitely picking up. How much could I expect of a lift if I was doing a business degree and my salary versus doing fine arts or something like that?
How much a lift? Well, it depends. Where you're starting from.
We're talking cash here, you know.
Yes, but as you said before, if you go from zero to 400 million, it's actually more than a 1,000,000% return. It's an infinite percent return. So it depends where you're starting from.
Well, yeah, if you get 400 million, like my last guest, hello.
Exactly.
That would be awesome. No, but I mean, when you graduate, a fine arts student makes like negative $1,000 a month, or, you know, and, you know, so there's different averages for each degree program, right? And, you know, and I'm sure you have from your other programs, like, what's the average SPJ MBA graduate make? Or do you have it offhand?
Yeah, well, it really depends, because we're talking about a lot of different countries. So if you look at our MBA graduates, they tend to, some of them move back to places like India, so places from the subcontinent. Some move on to places like the US. So straight away you can start to see there's a great variety in terms of different potential.
So the highest paid ones are the ones that go to United States of America.
Yeah, or to the UK or to Australia. Or
the average Harvard MBA graduate, do you know how much they make? Like right out of school, no business experience whatsoever. But they can make they know how to use Excel. But probably much better than I do. But do you know how much they make graduating?
I can't. I'm not willing to give you that number offhand.
I think it's $120,000 a year starting. So that's 40,000 dirhams a month.
It depends on whether
right
they're
out of the gates.
It depends on what they're doing, though. Really, if they're going to be entrepreneurs starting their own business, I think it wouldn't be 120,000.
No, this is average.
Yeah.
It's an average. So in fact, you know, to your point, that entrepreneur who makes nothing, like our guest Ali, who almost lost his shirt on the hard streets on Sheikh Zayed Road, his Kandura. I guess they don't say that, but you know, he had a tough time. That's factored into it. So there's actually some graduates who are making much more than that right out of the gate. So it's awesome.
Sure.
To do that, but I missed that boat.
Well, that's an MBA program as well. So I'm talking about an undergraduate program.
Mm. Gives you the right skills, though. I mean, I think if you want to be an entrepreneur, the business one is a good degree to get. I always think if you could be an accountant and a lawyer at the same time together, that would be the best.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of our degree program, I can talk to that. And the difference with that is that we've actually worked out what you need to have to be a successful global business leader. So it's a mixture of all these skills you've been talking about, the legal skills, the accounting skills, marketing skills, financial skills, but it's also all of these soft skills that you need. So it's being able to understand different people, how to negotiate, how to think creatively, how to innovate, how to make decisions. That's a key part. And we build all of that into our program. So it's not just about going and listening to person like me talking to you and giving presentations to you. It's actually, if you join our program, it's fun, it's exciting. You're in there debating, you're in there making films, you're in there giving presentations yourself, doing simulations, playing games.
Everybody mentions this innovation, though. I don't believe in innovation. If you look in the money in the market, I think, you know, the amount of money that's made through innovation is like 1%. You know, you wake up in the morning, you don't want to have some ostrich omelet. You know, you want to have your regular stuff that you
love. See, I don't know. I disagree, because I was talking to your other guest earlier, and I think he's pretty innovative. So,
is he?
Yes.
Are you? His mic's not on, so he can't.
His mic's not on. Okay, sorry. I'm looking at him, expecting to chime in and tell
you
that he is.
You're very strategic. He's a business school. You're very strategic. She's like, first I will rally political support.
I always go back to Sun Tzu and Machiavelli. Yeah.
But I caught you off, you know, because I saw it coming. So I closed the back door on this deal.
Right. Okay.
No, but I think it's overplayed. I mean, you know, for example, if I open a pizza shop, you know, if I'm just selling pizza the way it was been made for the last 30 years in Dubai Mall, I bet you anything I'm in the money. You know, if I open a hamburger shop, if you really look at the businesses that are on the ground that are functioning, you know, so many of them are not that innovative, you know.
Well, yeah, but you see, it depends how you're defining innovation. If you're talking about something completely new, or you're talking about a tweak, and a tweak will get you somewhere. You've already got your business model proven. You tweak it, you do something slightly different.
So
and
you're saying a change, because that's what
that's innovation.
Coca-Cola,
but that's innovation.
Believes that. Coca-Cola is like, look at us, we're innovative. We made Cherry Coke. It's like, you know, like, to me, I don't think it's, you know, Red Bull was innovative. They completely, you know, that was a blue ocean
but
strategy.
There's innovation and there's commercialization of the innovation. So you actually, there's no point being too out of the box if you can't commercialize it.
The commercialization of the innovation?
Yeah. Okay. That's how you're going to make money.
Right. I'm confused now.
Well, you have to come up with an idea, then you have to make money off it.
Right. So innovation takes longer to get cash flow, right?
But if you tweak an existing product, then you already know that there's a market for it. You tweak it, it's different. It catches people's eyes because it's different. So that's the innovative part about it. But you've already got a sort of proven marketplace for it. Versus if you've got something completely new, then you're starting from scratch. It takes a lot longer to build your return.
Okay. Well, coming up, we're going to give Dr. Brenda is going to bring in her backup here. We have Ali. He's a local businessman, entrepreneur. He's had a really roller coaster ride here, and he owns several businesses. He's made his money, lost it, made it back again, and we're going to hear his lessons learned on his road to the top in just a minute. This is one multi-million dollar story you really don't want to miss. All right, welcome back to Eye on Careers. We've got Dr. Brenda here from the S.P. Jain School of Global Management. And this studio is getting heated up. We have some very serious strategic innovation, diverse discussion happening tonight. We also have Ali Al-Tahir here. Ali, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here. I thought of this song when you were, I mean, you started out, you were sweating in the, you know, sweatshop of Dubal, you know, where they're like furnaces. It was like back in the day, and you're shoveling coal in the thing, and you're wiping sweat from your brow, and there's blisters bleeding on your hands. Or was it more like you were in an air conditioned like office? And
well, that was 1984. I'm not sure how many people of our listeners were born then. I tend to give some presentation to university students, and this is the first question that I asked them. But 1984, that must have been about 30 years ago. Yes, I was a trainee in Dubai. I went for a few weeks during the year to the hot smelter plant. And at very early stages, I got exposed to the corporate culture and to the hands-on job.
And at that point, you decide it's not for you?
No, actually, I got a couple of years of training in Dubai, and then I was sent to the UK. So I got some pretty decent education. But then I came back in 1991, and after a couple of years of working at Dubai, I thought, I want to be a businessman. So I decided, along with a friend of mine, to go and venture into the business world. We looked around, what were other people doing, and rent-a-car seemed to be like a very good business to get into. Within a matter of 1 year, I was totally broke. I had sold my car.
Oh my God. I thought you were going to say, within 1 year, we were making tons of money. We have Dr. Brenda. Welcome back to Ion Careers, by the way.
Thank you.
So is this because he wasn't innovative enough? Is this what the
I think he had to diversify his risk, because we know that you don't believe in diversification, Shane. So
I don't believe in what people say about diversification. Is that people say that having diversification in the business creates more innovative ideas, and that is clearly not the case, because when you look at where the most patents in the world are registered, it's registered in Japan, which is one of the most homogeneous populations in the world. So a lot of people are dressing up labor arbitrage as diversification, and when you look at the most diverse populations, they actually have the lowest level of innovation, in fact. And that's what I'm saying is that if you really want to look at where is innovation coming from, it's not coming from the most diverse teams. What you get from the most diverse teams is the lowest cost position and probably a more efficient manufacturing base. That's what I was saying. But does that seem wrong?
Well, it's interesting observation.
I don't believe in a lot of things. I also don't believe in zero gravity.
Good.
Guys are like, no, because they say it's zero gravity, right? Well, what's holding the moon in place? If there's no gravity in space, how is the moon sitting there? It's a lot of the things that you're taught in school and life, it's all lies. It's not true. You know, do you believe in zero gravity?
I haven't really thought about it, but I don't actually think there is gravity out in space, because we would think of gravity from the context of the Earth.
No, but how's the moon stay there for all these millenniums?
Well, it might be being pulled in other directions from other planets, for you know.
By what? By what's pulling it?
There could be different gravity pulls from different...
So there's gravity in space. You just admitted there's no zero gravity.
I have no thought process on it as yet. I'm trying to analyze it. I'm trying to think critically.
Okay, so we have the professor with us here. So we can analyze and find out where your success is coming from, Ali. So what happens next? You're broke. So this is the first time you go broke. You leave the corporate world. You leave the safe haven of your salary, and you think you're going to make your riches. What was the emotional experience like?
Well, I think I must have been just under 25 then, and it was quite tough for me to continue like this. And I thought to myself, you need to go and get a job. And I looked around. Etisalat was a big company around, and I applied for Etisalat. They refused to hire me, and I refused to take that for an answer. And I forced myself into Etisalat, and I stayed in Etisalat for about 4 years. Before I decided I want to be a businessman once again. So I had my second attempt in 1997.
So was this all a grand plan, though? Like, you went to Etisalat, saved up your money, in the back of your head, you know, this is my startup capital for my next run.
Yeah, and I thought I've learned a few other things also, and I've got a few more tricks down my sleeve. This was my second attempt. So I set up my second shop in Khaled bin Walid Road.
Electronic. Are you married at this point, or you're still single?
I was married. I was married.
Ah, okay. So yes. Did your wife think you were nuts when you said, I'm leaving my job?
Yes, I think maybe by the second attempt, definitely. She thought, I've decided now to quit the job again and venture into my own business. This time, I think within the first 7 months, I start to see the symptoms of the first failure. And I figured out, in another 3 to 4 months, if you continue doing whatever you're doing, you probably are going to end up broke once again. So this time I decided, let me get a part-time job. And I ended up working at the Dubai Municipality. It's not typically a part-time job, but by 2 o'clock, you hit the door and you leave. Within a few months, I got a call from Thuraya Satellite. It's a company that was spinned off by Etisalat. And they offered me a job this time, but the job was in the U.S. So I was sent to the U.S. along with a team of other engineers to do the project management for the part of the satellite system. And I think that was a turning point for me. I was exposed now to very large and systematic corporations. I worked with Hughes, with Boeing, Lockheed Martin. And Thoraya was a startup company. It was probably the largest startup company then. The project cost around $1.2 billion, $1997 billion. So we did everything. We did anything from writing the specifications to meeting with clients to shredding the paper. And that gave me the experience of startups. And then later on, I was involved in product development also when I came back here to the UAE. Then in 2003, which is roughly around 5 years from my last attempt, the real estate wave was starting to build up. And this time I said, instead of jumping into the business world, keep your job, start something, and when you are safe and secure, maybe you should jump off board. So I set up my company then. It was a security and man guarding company. It still exists until today.
Today, did you make money this time?
Yes, yes. Within, I think, almost about 1 year, I decided that I want to diversify. That's something you don't believe in, but I strongly believe in it. And I set up my holding company, which is AST Group. The objective of AST Group is to research the market, find opportunities, and decide if these opportunities are of interest to the group, and then materialize them. So soon after that, I adventured with a doctor that I met. This doctor had a very intellectual engineering mind, and he had a medical device. He had invented a medical device. He wanted an investor, so I invested with him. We created this medical device in here in UAE, manufactured it in Jebel Ali. His name was Ali. My name is Ali. We manufactured in Jebel Ali, and we call the device the alligator. These devices are called alligators.
What do they do exactly?
They're used for treatment of hemorrhoids as well as treatment of bleeding esophagus. It's a very common case across many parts of the world. So there was a huge market for these. But then we realized as we went down the road that it's not so easy to enter the medical device manufacturing. There are lots of regulations and there are lots of big manufacturers that sometimes dominate the market. And the need and innovation are not necessarily factors for success. I spent almost nearly about 2 years investing into this medical device. And during that phase, I came across a very interesting investment opportunity in Jebel Ali. All I had in my pocket was maybe around 20,000 dirhams, and this property
because the alligator had taken all the rest. So your diversification strategy, which you believe in, wasn't paying off.
I think probably my nature of business is I always look around for opportunities, and if something attracts me, I'll go for it. So while I was manufacturing the device in Jebel Ali, I came across this property which was abandoned, and somebody told me that it's a distressed opportunity, and you can go and probably if you find the owner, then I'll finance it for you. So I went after it. I found the owner, and my investor disappeared. I was so attached to this opportunity that I didn't want to let it go.
What was so special about this property?
The market price for it was around 2 million dirhams, and the guy was asking for around 1 million. So basically what I did is I secured the property by giving a deposit of around 20,000 dirhams. And then I started to market the property to my friends and my colleagues. And within a period of almost 3 days, I secured the first phase of funding that we needed.
Opportunity knocks. This is the story of Ali, the one of Dubai's greatest entrepreneurs, a man who must be made of rubber because he always bounces back. And here also sharing the experience with us is Dr. Brenda from SP Jain School of Global Management. We're going to be right back. Welcome back to Eye on Careers. We're here with Dr. Brenda from SP Jain School of Global Management. Doctor, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
And Ali Altaher, one of the region's greatest entrepreneurs, a man who's made from rubber because he keeps bouncing back every time he falls to the ground and comes back bigger and better than he was last time. Ali, you were just telling us how you bought your first property with 20,000 dirhams, $2 million property in Jebel Ali.
Yeah, and I think this is a very good case where you are able to sell before you even buy.
Can you just tell us the story? So you put 20,000 down on a property, you went and got the investors, then what happened? You got your friends and stuff to invest the rest of the money.
Right. And then I had one condition on my contract with them, that I can buy back their shares at 150% within the first 12 months. So what I did then immediately, I went and rented out this property for 3 years and collected the money in advance without any increase to a company called Clarion Logistics in Jebel Ali, who were happy to rent it from me at that price and then rent it forward to Siemens at double the price. So everybody made money. I collected I collected 3 years money in advance, and I invested it. By the time we came to the close to the 12 month, I called my friends and I told them, look guys, your money is going to be in your account on this date, so I think this is a good deal for everyone.
And then you own the property.
And then I own the property, yes.
So you basically turned 20,000 dirhams into 2 million dirhams in 12 months.
Right.
Wow.
Yes. And this property happened to be with me until after the crisis. And it saved me from difficulties later on. After the global crisis, I was in heavy debts, and this was the only thing that saved me out.
So this also brought you into the real estate boom, which in essence was the seed of your next downfall. So on one hand, is it the thing that saved you, or is it the thing that was the genesis of your next bankruptcy?
I think it gave me a taste of how good the real estate money can be. And at that time, the real estate wave was at its highest. I had denied the real estate wave at earlier stages because I felt it was crazy. People are selling properties based on some MOU, IOU document, which they didn't know even what it meant. I worked for a corporate world for quite a few years, and I knew what an MOU meant. An MOU is just a memorandum of understanding that we can agree on now, and then later on I can walk away and say, I'm sorry, there was a misunderstanding. So I felt that this thing is going to blow up at somebody's face, and I denied the real estate wave initially. But then after my acquisition, I started to see how good the money was. And this wave was so high that I couldn't ignore it. And I thought, if you can't beat them, you might as well join them. So I went and got a franchise from one of the world's largest real estate companies. It's called RE/MAX. And there was already a couple of franchises.
You bought the RE/MAX franchise?
Yes, I was the third RE/MAX franchisee here in Dubai and in the UAE. There was already one in Dubai, one in Abu Dhabi, and I was the third one. So I got the franchise on an exclusive basis, and within a matter of 6 months, I had acquired the exclusive rights for the whole UAE, and I became the master franchisee. And we were doing so well in the RE/MAX franchise that, and I looking around, there was a tower coming up under the name of Michael Schumacher, another one in the name of Boris Becker, and branded real estate was coming in. And I thought, Ali, you need to go and grab a piece of the excitement. So at that time, I went and got the exclusive rights for the Brazilian football legend Pelé. And I acquired his rights for the Middle East and North Africa to develop Pelé Tower, Pelé Resort, Pelé Hotel, Pelé Cafe, and all these various Pelé entities. I signed the agreement in 2008, in the summer of 2008, and went on holiday. I went against the advice of my bankers, who were telling me that you're walking on thin ice, there's a lot of money leaving the country, and you should not go and take risk. And I thought, nah, I'm at the hype of this. I cannot.
It's like a contagion. It was like hysteria, right? Like, yeah. Like at the height of the boom, it was like everybody was going to be a millionaire. People were just blowing cash, like know, tomorrow was insane.
You didn't have to be smart. All you had to do was to put your hand on some opportunity, or even sometime attend a dinner. So I signed that agreement, and it was a very big ceremony in Burj Al Arab, and we had all the press and media, and we'd announced that we're going to be over the next 10 years investing $10 billion. And I, right after that, I went for my summer holiday to come back and find out that the markets are not there anymore. Markets started to get stagnant a little bit, slowly. And initially, I was in a state of denial. But then over time, I figured out that you need to go and do something else. So real estate was my prime business. And I had a little bit of money remaining. So I went and bought a spa. It's called Dubai Med Spa.
But it's, at this point, you were going bankrupt, right? Wasn't there like massive debts that you couldn't pay? That people wanted to lynch you? Was there any kind of...
Well, cash,
it was dramatic. I mean, aren't you smoothing it over just a little bit?
Cash was still flowing in. It took me almost one year to start to feel the heat. Cash was still flowing in. We had lots of deals in the market. I was aggressively investing.
And what year is this?
This was in late 2008.
Okay.
I kind of thought that if everybody is leaving the market, maybe there is opportunity and there is room right now because everybody's fleeing. Now you can raise the flag and enter the market and start to take some market share. Unfortunately, people were in a lot of pain. You were going out and reaching them, and when you were about to tell them that you had something to sell, they were faster than you and offering you what they had to sell. So it took me almost about a year to come to terms with the fact that this market is not coming back anytime soon. And in March 2009, I acquired Dubai Med Spa simply because every time I spoke to a friend of mine or one of my clients, they were either at the lawyers or at the accountants or at the hospital. And I figured out healthcare and well-being was a very interesting sector, an important sector to get into. So we acquired Dubai Med Spa. We monkeyed around with it for almost about 1 year, not knowing, you know, which direction to go. And that center today have turned into Dubai Polyclinic. It's a medical center. We have various practices from anti-aging, skincare, cosmetics, as well as family medicine. And it's one of my best businesses today. It wasn't that easy. We went into further difficulties. I had a lot of real estate exposure that we were involved in. And things started to get really very tough. And my company shrunk down from almost 50 to about 5 people. Out of the 5 people. Out of the 5, I think maybe 3 of them were office boys.
Ah, okay.
Including, so...
So you drank a lot of tea. It's like 2 of you and 3 office boys.
Yeah. And
make your Moroccan tea. No, cappuccino. Okay, give me cappuccino and you get the tea. Give me 2 teas, 2 cappuccinos.
But some interesting things developed out of that. Obviously, I'd lost everything that I had. And the only thing I had around me were these tea boys. And I said to them, you know, guys, you need to go and find yourself a job. I will not be able to pay you. And I sent them home. Next day, they showed up again, and I said, what's wrong with you? I told you to go home. And they looked at me, and they said, sir, we don't want to go anywhere. We want to work for you. All we need is just food and shelter. And that was very touching. Those 3 boys today, one of them is one of my top performers at our Do franchise operation.
What does he do at the Do franchise?
He's a salesman.
Really?
Yes. This shy little boy who would walk into my office and drop the cup of coffee and then walk backwards. Today is one of my top performers in the Duo operation. I have another guy who is happened now to be my creative designer. He got married and he brought his wife, and his wife works for me right now. So maybe the lesson learned in here is that you can lose and make money, and that's the business we're in all the time.
And you still get them just for food and shelter?
I think what I have developed with those people is a sense of trust. I can take them along with me wherever I want to go. And that's what you want to develop as you grow.
This is the story of Ali Altar. He is one of the leading entrepreneurs here on the ground. He's come back from bankruptcy many, many times. And he's going to be sharing his secrets to success with us in just a minute. His big learnings and what it takes. What are the traits of a successful person? We're going to hear that in just a minute. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are here with Dr. Brenda from the SP Jain School of Global Management. Hi.
Hi again. No, I've been fascinated listening to Ali's story.
And we're also listening to Ali Altar, who is the chairman of AST Group and owns everything from alligators to do franchises. So welcome back, Ali.
Yeah, thank you. You want to know how I became the chairman?
How did you become the chairman?
When I started my company, all I had was a chair, a table, and a whiteboard. So I decided to become the chairman of the whiteboard.
And three T-boys.
That was later on when I grew and became really big.
Yes, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you, in terms of your, obviously, key to success is the people who you work with and who you surround yourself with. So what's the average span of... Oh, sorry, he's making gestures at me again, so hopefully he can hear me better now. I'm trying to work out how long on average do your employees tend to stay with you? Do they tend to stay with you for many, many decades or many years? Or?
Well, I've got people that have completed recently 8 years with me.
Wow.
Yes.
Eight's a lucky number because eight is actually the infinity sign. So that's a good omen.
Infinite right return. Right.
But nobody can come on the show without without being asked our famous question, which is, what's your secret to your success?
Eye on Careers now reveals the secrets to success.
Ali, what's your secret to your success?
I think determination is very important. Risk also. Without risk, there is no rewards. And you'd have to be innovative. Again, I know that you don't agree with that, but without innovation, you probably die.
Eye on Careers.
In association with LeMoon.com, jobs, courses, and all things career.
What about diversification?
I think I diversify for two reasons. One, because I get bored too soon, and I need to have the next big, exciting project for me. I'm a startup guy, and I like startups. I hate routine. I hate operations. I'm very lousy at these operations. So I need to have good people that can take care of the operations.
But, you know, when you look at this now, you have to have determination, and you have to manage your risk. You know, invariably, when you look at a lot of these big businesses, they diversify into when you don't know the business, when you haven't grown up in the business. If you look at our last guest, he was 19 years in the software programming business. He understands the risks. He knows where the potholes are. He knows where around the bend, where the road goes. You find people jumping into a business. They see the opportunity. Nobody drops the ball or fails on where the opportunity is. Where people fail or drop the ball is they don't see that risk. They don't see that black swan event coming.
Well, for you to be successful, at least in my business model, we need to have the breadth to go across many different sectors, and we need to have the depth. You cannot have both at the same time. So what I tend to do is I need to have specialists who can really drill deep, and that's their functionality. And then I go across. The combination of the two of us, I think, makes our organization. And that's the success factor for us.
So you bring in specialists to mitigate that risk, who know the business, who've grown up.
Absolutely, absolutely. Our strategy right now in each one of our operations to have a CEO that's been there, done that. There is no monkeying around.
That's what he's doing?
There is no monkeying around with the business.
Oh, I thought he was monkeying around.
No, he should not. We won't pay somebody to do that. At least I'll do it myself.
Right. So what do you look as the key traits that you think, you know, someone who's really, you know, for example, when you're hiring someone, what do you look for in them?
I'd want to have somebody that's very, very honest. We want that there's no compromise on that. I think honesty and integrity is very important. Hard work also, as well as being smart. But between the three of them, I would say being a hard worker and honest, you can compensate for the rest. We cannot compensate for lack of integrity.
Right.
But what about passion? Because just in, as an observation in terms of your secret to success, and I didn't say it, but it comes across in everything you said is your passion for all these different ideas you've got. Would you say that's important for your employees too?
One of the things that we do here in our organization is to fit people in where they are. And I think one of the mistakes that traditionally happens in this part of the world is when we want to promote somebody or we want to reward somebody, we promote him and we make him a manager. If the guy doesn't have the skill sets to manage people, we will destroy him and destroy the people underneath.
Destroy him.
Yes. Yes. Because then we're going to have high expectations of the guy. That's what happens.
That's how you do it. Destroy. You either be successful or I will destroy you. I will destroy you. But his passion, he's not that passionate. Excuse me, Professor. He's not very passionate in my instance because he says it only lasts 6 months and then it fizzles out and he has to go do something else.
No, but so he's passionate about new ideas.
Is she misreading that? Because you're not
passionate. Yes, you are misreading it. It's 9 months.
So, you know, it's not that passionate. I don't believe in passion.
Do you believe in anything?
I don't believe in anything tonight. Okay. But, you know, I think it's, you know, it's that drive, you know, where he wasn't passionate about the alligator. He wasn't really passionate about real estate. He was passionate about being successful. He was determined. It was determination, tenacity. Ali, which one was it?
Sorry?
He's not even listening.
He's just speaking. He's not even so listening. Fast.
Okay, she's saying that you're very passionate,
yes.
Right? But I'm saying you can't be that passionate because every 6 months you have to do something else because you become disenfranchised with the idea. So how's that passion?
It's passion when you start off with
it. First of all, it's 9 months. second, the idea of startups is a very well-developed and established model in the U.S. and in some parts of Europe. There are some people who just set up companies and they sell them. They get them from A to B and then they hand them over to somebody else.
Those are not, they're not called businessmen though. There's a name for them. They're called business artists because they create business.
Right.
So you're a business artist. You're not a businessman.
I think I figured out lately that I don't want to be a businessman. And I think that's the big difference between entrepreneurs and businessmen.
So we're coming up on the hour here. What's your final piece of advice for us as we head off in the sunset to chase our dreams?
Well, I think nobody can be successful alone. Success comes along with other people. If you are passionate about getting into entrepreneurship, then I think you should hang around with a bunch of people, sit together, find out the areas where you lack, and supplement them with other people around you. Together, I'm sure they're going to be successful.
Ali, thank you so much for your time and coming out and having the courage to share not just your wins, but your tough moments. I think that's the most important part of your story and the big takeaway. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
And hopefully we can have you on again soon. And Dr. Brenda, thank you so much for coming out from the S.P. Jain School of Global Management. The new Tri-City program is just seeing its first batch of graduates. So we wish you well and look forward to watching your program blossom.
Thank you.
And hopefully we can have you on again soon and we can argue more about diversification.
And passion.
And innovation
well, hopefully
too,
by then you'll have found something you believe in.
Hopefully. That's it for this episode of Eye on Careers. I'm your host, wishing you luck in chasing your dreams.